From historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, this is The Seminary Explores. Conversations about people, politics, theology, and life with your host, Dr. Kristen Johnston-Largen.
My name is Kristen Johnston-Largen, and I'm here with Seminary Explores today with two guests that are on campus with us. They're going to be teaching a course this summer. Summer of 2014, Donna Lynn and the Reverend Paul Hoffman. They are here to teach a course on adult faith formation. Donna is an art therapist and a licensed mental health counselor, but her more important title is a COG, Child of God, which I share with you, Donna. And Pastor Paul Hoffman is retired pastor of Finney Ridge Lutheran Church, and he currently is called by the Northwest Washington Synod as a writer and teacher for the larger church. And so we're just thrilled to have you on campus and really excited to be able to talk with you today about what you are doing together. So let's start with that. What are you here to teach, and how would you describe it?
Well, we're very excited to start our class this afternoon with 10 Gettysburg students and some visitors over the course of the week as well. And what we're really here to do is to share our experience from our congregation in Seattle that has had 20 years of experience of forming new Christians. Seattle is a city that's 90% unchurched.
Yeah, wow.
So we definitely live in the post-Christian era. Out in our little corner of the Pacific Northwest. So if people come to inquire about faith, it doesn't really work for us to put them through a two-hour pastor's new member class and then expect them to know everything that's going on the following Sunday, and a week after that be the chairman of the Stewardship and Finance Committee.
Yeah, right.
So we have a very intentional process that's modeled after what the ancient church did of apprenticing people into faith. And I'm so privileged to travel with a person who was apprenticed into the faith at the hand of very caring, loving sponsors and a lay catechist and a loving congregation that...
And great pastors.
Thank you.
Yes.
That grabbed onto her tightly enough so that she didn't slip through our fingers.
I tried.
But not so tightly that we squeezed the life out of her.
Yeah.
So I'd like her to tell you a little bit about her story.
Great. We'd love to hear that.
Well, I've been a seeker all my life of truth, but I come from an unchurched family. So church is foreign territory to me, and I, however, struggled with seeking for a way to make sense of life. So I studied world religions, got interested in psychology, followed the feminist movement, some radical politics, became disenchanted with all of that. And through 12-step programs, found a higher power, which was a way to God, but it still wasn't a story that made sense. And I practiced spirituality kind of buffet style, a little of this and a little of that.
Yeah.
One day, in extreme frustration, I was feeling badly about myself and unforgiven, and I kept thinking, why am I unforgiven? And isn't that Jesus's big gig, forgiveness? So I started yelling and screaming for Jesus, even though I really didn't feel much attraction to him. And he came and said, "You are forgiven, and I've been waiting for you to ask," in an unmistakable way. And so, much to my astonishment, I thought, well, I should find out more about Jesus. And I thought, well, maybe in one of these neighborhood churches around here, I think they're talking about that guy. And so I went to Finney Ridge Lutheran, because it was just the next street over, and was invited to dinner and to the adult faith formation class, which I thought it was a class. It's really not a class. It's a process, but where you could ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I had nothing but questions, thousands of questions, millions of questions. And luckily, they had a place for someone like me who could bring her doubts. And, you know, I didn't even know what a narthex was. Is that an animal or a disease? Or what is
right.
that? You know? And so, foreign language, foreign place,
yep.
And they have this 9-month process called The Way, and I did try to get away. But the crafty Christians and the Holy Spirit got hold of me, and I dropped out of it three times, and by the third year, now they can't get rid of me.
Yeah. Fabulous.
Donna actually is one of our lead catechists mm-hmm. now in our process. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who don't know what a catechist is a small group leader that meets with candidates and sponsors Sunday evening after Sunday evening. They sit around a round table in groups of eight people or so and discuss the gospel text that was preached on earlier that day. And they don't discuss it in a way that tries to get at what does this text mean, but rather in a very open way for newcomers to faith, tries to get at the question, how is God speaking to me through this text?
Yeah,
there's plenty of chance later in Christian life to really dig in and do the thing a theologian would love, get at what does this text mean?
Yeah.
But in the beginning, we try to find that intersection between what Jessica Cray Duckworth calls the old comers and the newcomers, the place where those two fringes intersect with experiences of not knowing Christ and knowing Christ.
Yeah.
And when this process started in our parish 20 years ago, we really patted ourselves on the back about how wonderful we were to provide these poor souls who had never heard about Jesus the opportunity to come to faith. But as you know, God is a God of surprises. And the really big surprise for us was that their doubts, their questions, their fears, their passion about the faith really began to inflame ours.
Sure.
And in the process of less than a generation, our congregation was so renewed.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we often make the assumption that people inside the church don't have these doubts and questions and somehow have a sense. You know, for me, when I heard you talking, Paul, I was thinking, oh yeah, of course. These are what you're asking of the text is, how does this matter, right? How it makes a difference, right? Which is, of course, of critical interest to everybody. And what I think is so interesting about this process is the way it confounds our typical expectation or assumption that, oh, we want to make it as easy as possible, as quick as possible for people to get into the church, you know? And I think that that's often really, it may work, whatever that means in the short term, in terms of just getting a member in, but in terms of having them have a sense of why do you really want to be a part of this community and what does that really mean? Of course, that's going to be a longer process. And so I wonder if you could just talk about that a little bit.
I'd love to. I call that the gradual workings of grace, that you begin to understand that ritual isn't meaningless, it's meaningful, and you're starved for it, and I didn't even know that I was, and that there's a real community with real people that you can have relationships with that are trying to find meaning and service.
Yeah.
And who knew all that was at a church? Yeah. Not me.
Right.
And I really didn't.
Of course.
And I would ask my questions, and longtime Lutherans would say, "Psst, Donna, thanks for asking that question. We've always wondered that, but we were too embarrassed to ask because we think we should already know that."
Right.
And everybody began saying, "Why do we say that? Why do we do that?" Yeah. And, of course, I'm learning that, you know, leading a Christian life is the life I want to lead, is a story that makes sense in a community to practice in with people that are helping each other and beyond just your own selfish interests. It was thrilling and surprising to me.
Yeah, right, right. Well, and I think, again, you mentioned already this the context of Seattle, which is clearly post-Christian, but I think everywhere the assumptions that pastors and even people in the congregation can make about what people know about church, what people assume about church, those are just out the window. That's not true anymore.
Well, 20 years ago when we started this on the West Coast, we were a little bit of an anomaly as such a highly unchurched part of the country. Kansas City is now 50% unchurched.
Really?
Albany has been named by the Barna Group as the number one. Albany, New York has been named by the Barna Group as the number one post-Christian city in America.
Wow.
We all know that New England has gone the way of the Pacific Northwest. Northwest. Yeah. I just came from the Nebraska Synod, where their bishop informed me that in every zip code in the state of Nebraska, there are between 50 and 65% of their population who are unchurched. So 20 years ago when we started this, a lot of people were scratching their head and saying, what are those crazy Christians in the Pacific Northwest doing?
Right.
And now they really want to learn what it is that has helped us to build healthy, vital congregations in the face of the demise of mainline Protestant Christianity.
Right.
And we're so eager to share it, this message and this way of being Christian.
Right. Well, I really think it's an exciting opportunity. I know that at least here, I mean, you're here in central Pennsylvania, which is not only historically Christian, but Lutheran, right? I mean, we have the primarily from German immigrants. And so it's very, very threatening. And it's hard not to feel like this is a loss, the shift that has happened. And I think happened relatively quickly. But when I hear you talk about then what this makes possible, it's actually very exciting because it's a chance not only to bring new people, but to revitalize the people who are already there, right? Who have grown up with everyone assuming we all know what we're doing, but actually we really don't. And how can we have this opportunity to have some really exciting conversations that reminds us or tells us anew of why this is important?
Well, and isn't it exactly the pattern of our faith when you think about it?
Right.
Death and resurrection,
sin
and forgiveness, exile and homecoming.
Right. Yeah.
But realizing that this is the best possible moment to be the church. It's kind of Good Friday, and Easter is right around the corner.
Yeah.
And we can look at those numbers and get very, very fearful, or we can look at those numbers of the church's institutional demise and say, wow, God is about to do a new thing. The new creation is at hand.
Yeah.
And we just need to lean into it and take the gifts of grace that God pours out upon us seriously. And renewal is promised.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the practical things that you talk to? I mean, it's one thing to talk about this at kind of a meta level here in this room. But when you're actually out in the field with pastors who are saying, or Christians who are saying, yeah, that's all great, but I'm looking around the pews and the numbers are getting smaller and I feel more alone. I feel more isolated. I don't know how do you talk about? I mean, what are some of the things that you found to be helpful? I mean, some of the practical components of this process, Donna, that you experienced and Paul, now that you both are teaching together.
Well, I think we start with baptism. Mm-hmm. And we really talk with pastors in sometimes a very painful way about their baptismal practice in their own local congregations. How are you doing baptisms? What kind of preparations are you making for parents to parent their newly wet children? And we actually begin by having folks take a look at the baptismal promises that are in Evangelical Lutheran worship and asking the really sometimes hard, sometimes even embarrassing question, are the people that you're bringing to the font to make these promises equipped to to keep these promises? Do they understand what it means to teach their children the Lord's Prayer, the Creed, the Ten Commandments, provide for their instruction in the Christian faith? What is your congregation doing to help them be prepared to make those promises with honesty and integrity?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the young parent's fault or the adult who wants to be baptized's fault that they don't know what those things mean. That's a breakdown of our formation process over the years of Christendom. We've just assumed everybody always knew what those things meant, and they don't anymore. So that's where we start. And sometimes that's a really, really hard conversation to have.
So if a pastor says to you, look, I have people who come to me. I know they're probably not going to stay in the church. It's the grandparents who come, right? And are you telling me I shouldn't baptize that child?
We always say, what we're suggesting to you is that before you baptize that child, you put out a series of welcome mats.
Nice.
To the grandparents, to the parents, to the child, to the congregation. And maybe Donna could talk about some of the welcome mats that were put out in front of her. Some very practical things like great food.
Oh, that's a super welcome mat.
and some more esoteric things like space to ask really hard questions.
Yeah.
Well, food got me in the door, actually. He told me they served dinner before the discussion groups, and I don't cook at all.
Oh, so excellent.
You know,
right.
My husband says if he were going to have an affair, he'd have it in the kitchen, knowing he would never be discovered there. And so I went for dinner. But what I did was got fed Living Word and Living Water. That was the surprise. It was dinner plus.
Yeah.
And so that was a very practical thing, being fed on many different levels. And there were many different rites of welcome, which we talk about in our class, but one of them is being signed by the sign of the cross on different parts of your body. And that really freaked me out because it's like, I don't know about this.
Right.
But it really sunk in on a body level. This is about your whole life.
Yeah.
This is not just lip service Christianity. This is about how you live and how you're going to take this into your daily life.
Yeah.
And over the course of asking my questions, getting them answered, I also was being exposed to truly good Christian behavior. Things like saying grace before a meal, which is still not an entirely secure habit for me. And also understanding that service to others is what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And how beautiful and meaningful that is.
Yeah.
With others. I was in self-exile. That I understand now you can't do self-salvation. That doesn't work.
We love to try.
Yeah.
We love to try. But ultimately it doesn't work very well. Yeah.
It is really counterintuitive that asking for a higher level of commitment will create a higher level of discipleship.
Yeah.
But we're here to tell you, after 20 years of experience in our parish in our very secular city, that's exactly what we saw.
Yeah.
And if you think about that, it's kind of how the soccer league works.
9 days before the World Cup, for example.
You know, the higher level of commitment you ask
from
parents of second graders,
right?
The better soccer player that kid is when they're in 10th grade.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we just want to make, we want to make soccer player level Christian 10th graders.
Listen, I love this analogy. It's fabulous for me. But I do think you're absolutely right. Because I think that if you give people the idea that it doesn't, we'll just sort of take anyone. It doesn't really matter.
Easy in, easy out.
Easy in, easy out. I think you're absolutely right about that. And the sense in which we don't, there isn't this process because we're trying to weed people out or because it's very exclusive, but rather what we do here does affect our whole body,
whole life. And it's a serious commitment.
Yeah, right.
And it's, you will die to your old self and become new. And that's not a metaphor.
Yeah,
that's
right.
A lived reality.
Yeah, wow.
And it's not a membership. You're a disciple.
Right.
There's a huge difference.
Right.
And that's what we found out at Finney Ridge, is people became disciples. Those old, dead, outdated Bible stories jumped up and became real.
Yeah.
And we began practicing what I would call true Christianity in our lives and in our congregation.
Yeah, that's exciting.
We just had an Episcopal priest from Tennessee visit Seattle about 3 weeks ago, and he was a part of the way at Finney Ridge and was introduced to many people like Donna, some of our catechists, some of our current candidates. I wasn't there because I don't participate at Finney Ridge anymore. I've stepped aside so a new pastor can come and find his or her place there. But I did meet with him the next day, and he told me this fascinating story. He said, we started by having the group of 10 people that met with me introduce themselves to me. And by about the third person, I realized that I wasn't hearing introductions. I was hearing Christian testimony around the circle from people who had come to know Jesus through this process or had come to know Jesus more deeply through this process. And he said, to a person, rather than simply telling who they were and where they worked, they told me their story of faith.
Many with tears in their eyes.
Because you were there, right?
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah.
Many with tears in their eyes of how the faith became real and fulfilling in a way they never imagined. Many of them, including me, saying, you want me to do what? For how long? Not going to happen. Don't have time. Can't do it.
Right.
And to a one, each person said, we were so sad to see it end.
Wow.
It was so meaningful. Can we keep it going?
Wow.
How can we keep it going?
That's really exciting. Well, I can't, you know, we're already at 20 minutes. I can hardly believe it. But share, so if our listeners want to go somewhere to find out more, read more, where would you send them?
Well, we would love to have them attend a training event, which we do in local congregations across the country. We have three scheduled for this summer and fall, all of them on the West Coast. But we will go anywhere.
Do you have a website?
I do have a website. It's paulehoffman.com. And also, I would recommend that if this piques your interest even a little bit, a very inexpensive and quick reading book is Faith Forming Faith, which tells the story of how people's lives and how a congregation's life was transformed by a deep immersion in this ancient practice of forming new Christians by walking side by side.
Fabulous. Well, it's great to have you. We're looking forward to having you on campus all week, and just wish you the best, and not only in what you're doing here, but in the work that you're doing for the sake of the whole church and the gospel in the world.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Gettysburg. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are those of the individual speakers and are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.